This week on The Inswinger.
They just gave everything. They bullied Liverpool out of the game. The crowd fed off that. The crowd were outstanding, didn't stop singing. The away end was silent. It was just fantastic.
And it really reflects poorly on Marinakis, but I don't actually think it's all that surprising. They just have this knack in Europe of just finding ways to win. Welcome back to the Inswinger Podcast, Season 3, Episode 20. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
We have left London, or at least I have. Harrison's still hanging around in the UK, and we'll get to some of the business he's been up to in the UK. But I'm back in America. What a few months it was. We bounced around all over Europe, saw some of the best teams in Europe play, saw some of the best teams in England play. But speaking of
the worst.
Oh, yes, we saw some of the worst. So let's get right into it with the Merseyside derby that Harrison was in attendance at yesterday. Harrison, this was a game probably didn't have a ton of optimism in. Liverpool still part of that three-team title race. We'll get to where they stand now after a shocking 2-0 defeat to your boys. But just what was the performance like? What was the mood like? What did you see from your boys that allowed you to pull off such a big upset and essentially end Klopp's kind of time as Liverpool manager and the trophies that are going to go along with it? It seems like they're out of the title race now.
I think it'll be looked back upon as a famous night at Goodison, really. Part of this Goodison send-off that it deserves. We haven't beaten Liverpool in 14 years at home. So, I mean, boy, did we need that from an Everton perspective. A gritty performance following an important win against Forest. The thing I'm most proud of was that we really outfought Liverpool, which when you think of a Klopp team, you think of the energy, you think of the pressing, you think of the grit, the determination. And all of those things applied to Everton last night. You know, they absolutely they won the duels, they won the battles, brilliant offset pieces, brilliant in the air, organized defensively. I thought Branthwaite and Tarkowski were fantastic. Calvert-Lewin had his game of the season against Liverpool. McNeil looked back to his best. I mean, it was just a perfect storm for Everton, and the crowd was so, so up for it. I don't know what it is about that Sean Dyche tracksuit, but it seems to have brought us back to our best. We were absolutely brilliant last night against title contenders Liverpool. We haven't beaten in 14 years at Goodison. Everton were outstanding, down to a man. They were absolutely brilliant. It was just a performance filled with passion, aggression, grit, determination. They were brilliant defensively. Pickford made a few big saves. Efficient on the counter. Brilliant offset pieces. A Duncan Ferguson-esque header from Calvert-Lewin at the back post in front of the Gladys Street. It was just proper. It was a proper derby game. It was a proper derby performance. And it was a proper, proper atmosphere under the lights at Goodison. It was just brilliant. Everton, I mean, I haven't seen a performance like that from Everton in a while, in maybe ever against Liverpool. I mean, 2010, I was 8 years old. Don't remember it too well when we beat them last at Goodison. That it was just outstanding. The atmosphere was electric from start to finish. It was just such an incredible experience to be a part of. And the players deserved that. Boy, they deserved it. The performance they put in, the shift they put in. I mean, McNeil back to his best. Jack Harrison played really well. Ben Godfrey played really well coming back into the team for Ashley Young. Mikalenko finished the half after rolling his ankle, which looked like a really bad injury, potentially. Hopefully he's okay. But to continue and play the way he did for the rest of the half was just outstanding. And it just sums Everton up on the night. They just gave everything. They bullied Liverpool out of the game. The crowd fed off that. The crowd were outstanding. Didn't stop singing. The away end was silent. It was just fantastic. It was just absolutely fantastic. I still can't quite believe it, as you can tell. But the way Everton fought, the way they executed the game planning, you have to credit Sean Dyche for that. It's just something that the fans can be proud of and should be proud of. It was just a brilliant, brilliant occasion at Goodison Park. For Liverpool, I think they've done well to make it this far this season. And I know I'm not saying that in a condescending way. I think they are out of the title race now. They are But they are the third best team. And, you know, I think finishing has let them down time and time again. And that was the case last night. They had chances. As much as I think Everton deserved to win the game and did really well, Liverpool had chances, and they always will create chances. But I think what we've learned about them is that you kind of can't rely on Nunez and Diaz to put it in the net as consistently as a Sadio Mane and a Salah from a few seasons ago. I mean, Salah himself just looks well off it, and he has for weeks now. I mean, a friend of ours who's a Liverpool fan has said this. This isn't just me as an Evertonian, you know, saying Salah's been crap. I think he just looks off it, and the guy's had an unbelievable career, and, you know, we praised him, of course, on the podcast before, but I think we are starting to see, of course, an end of an era with Klopp leaving, but I think Mohamed Salah may have seen his day in this league. And I know that's harsh, but man, I've watched in the past few games and he just doesn't look himself. And last night he missed a few big chances. He did. And Nunez, of course, did. So listen, as fun to watch as some of these players can be for Liverpool, they aren't at the same level as they were a few seasons ago, you know, and the frustrating thing for them will be, you know, we're just starting to build something. It's the first season. This was the back in the top four season, and it turned into this title charge, which, you know, they've done incredibly well with. But it's bittersweet because Klopp's leaving, and they're going to have to sort of start again. I'm sure a new manager, maybe we can talk about, you know, the links and all that, will absolutely embrace the players that they have. But yeah, I mean, just this farewell tour, it doesn't seem to be ending the way they wanted it to. I think it's, you know, if you take that away, it's a pretty good season for Liverpool, right? I mean, let you know, at the beginning of the year, we were all like, title? No, they'll fade. And they've done really well. I mean, there's, what, four games left, and they're still, I mean, they're mathematically in it, but we've just seen City smash Brighton. They don't look to be letting off the gas anytime soon. So it looks like it's just going to be a Carabao Cup. Really a disappointing performance for Liverpool last night. Outfought by an Everton team that were right up for it, that were just fantastic. Probably their performance of the season that just gave everything. The Goodison crowd, it was a perfect storm for the blue half of Merseyside, and for Liverpool, that looks to be it, really done and dusted. Arsenal, we can talk about them, maybe still in it, but it looks to have gone from a 3-horse race to a 2-horse race.
Yeah, and I think where Liverpool kind of tailed off, and the Klopp leaving announcement was such an X factor, I think, because I think when it first got announced, I think my initial take was, is everyone going to be like bought in knowing that he's not going to be here next season? But by the same token, they know he's not going to be here next season, so they're going to give absolutely everything they have. What I think has happened is it's a combination of them not being totally ready to be title challengers. And like you said, we did kind of expect them to be a top four team. But once they found themselves in the position of being in a title race, the likes of Salah and the likes of Van Dijk and the likes of, you know, Szoboszlai started off hot. I think they kind of mentally, not checked out, but were unable to kind of keep up the necessary mental fortitude to sustain a title race, I think, knowing that Klopp was not going to be there next season. Because they're like, yeah, we can give it a go, but, you know, what is my future? For Salah, I think his head was turned by the Saudis and the huge money offer that came in last summer. We know his connections to the Middle East. He's Egyptian. Probably very appealing. Van Dijk had this career renaissance. You know, there were Ballon d'Or talks, but he's been shaky. Trent been out injured. Poor defending last night. His kind of England career seems up in the air. And Liverpool now as well, with no Klopp. I mean, it was just such a seismic decision to announce leaving in the middle of the season. I just wonder, would they have been better off without announcing that and just coming out at the end?
Yeah, it's funny. Wayne Rooney was talking about that last night. I don't know if you caught that on Sky. And it was a really interesting point, the timing, because it was always going to go one of two ways. It was either going to galvanize them, or it was just going to be too much expectation. It was going to end in tears, right? So, or if you go the other way, it's just an absolute shock at the end of the season. So there's no right way to do it, I suppose. But yeah, it didn't pan out. I never thought they had the squad for it in the first place. I think they've done well, as I said, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but we can move on to the two other title contenders. So Liverpool are all but out of it, but Arsenal are, on the other hand, they were knocked out of the Champions League. Disappointing end to that run against Bayern Munich, knocked out by Harry Kane and them again. However, they've bounced back again. They had a disappointing result against Villa, but bounced back. Disappointing result against Bayern, bounced back in a big way with a 5-0 thumping of Chelsea. And, I mean, Arsenal, you have to give them credit because we know how brilliant they can be. They've really turned up on the offensive side of things in recent weeks in terms of the goal production. You're seeing that from the likes of Havertz. I think Odegaard has returned to his best. Some brilliant play yesterday. I think Saka's a bit burnt out. We're not seeing quite that level of cutting edge from him, but you know the slack is being picked up by other players. And Arsenal, they're still in this thing. I mean, City were my prediction just because of what they're capable of come the end of the year. And now that they're out of the Champions League, I think that helps them even more. They're going to be fresh. They've just steamrolled Brighton, and they've got somewhat favorable fixtures. The Spurs game is going to be a tricky one, but Arsenal have some tricky games too. But where are you with Arsenal right now? I mean, they're definitely still in it, more so than Liverpool, but would you say City are the favorites, I guess, is my question.
City have to be the favorites because we know if both teams win out, it will be Man City. But, you know, tricky fixtures for both teams. We know Spurs can be a problem for Man City, especially away from home. But they can also be a problem for Arsenal. And we'll find out this weekend, really. I think we know what Arsenal are made of. I think they're more resilient than last year. I think they're playing their best football at the right time. I think they're playing the best football in the league, although City might have to say something about that because they were sensational tonight. But I do think they're still in it. I think they are the underdogs. And I think you could argue they are the best team in the league over the course of the 33, 34 games we've played. They've had a sensational season. They're scoring goals all over the pitch. They're better at the back. And, you know, like you said, other players are pitching in. Trossard is, you know, being one off the bench. He's worked his way into the starting 11. He's one of those guys where it feels like every time I watch him, he scores. You know what I mean? You need help, right, from other areas of the pitch. We've seen that with Man City over the years. They won the league without a striker. Haaland's injured. De Bruyne is popping up with a goal. Foden's popping up with two goals. Alvarez is there. So you need help from other areas, of course. So, yeah, I think they'll need, not a miracle, but they'll certainly need some luck if they're going to do it. And I think that luck will have to come the way of Tottenham Hotspur. They'll have to beat them, and they'll have to hope Spurs get a result against City. All it takes is a draw, right? All it takes is 2 points dropped. But even for Arsenal to win out will be a tough task. But I think they've surprised us with their resiliency this season. I mean, yes, they were poor against Bayern, thumping a Chelsea team who looked like maybe on the up after spanking Everton. You know, could they surprise a few? They dealt with that quite easily, and they just looked sensational going forward. And we've talked about their defensive record. So I think they're in a good position. But again, when you're coming up against a Man City side, and I've used this sort of phrase so frequently, you have to be perfect. And the slip-up against Villa might just cost them, unfortunately, whereas any other year they might get away with it. Any other team they're facing, they might get away with it. But it's Man City, and we know how strong they are. So City still have to be the favorites, but Arsenal certainly aren't out of it yet.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen this story unfold before with Liverpool in title races against Man City, and Liverpool have had some brilliant teams in the past. They've put up some unbelievable points tallies and not won the league. And it just kind of feels like this is going to be the tale for Arsenal again after last year, where it looked like they were cruising for so long. I think they learned from last year. I think they matured in the way they went about this season and in the way they were a bit more pragmatic this year defensively. You saw that in the game at the Etihad, but you kind of also saw that in their general play throughout the season. But as you said, when it mattered most, they've really turned things on. However, you know, will that result against Villa come back to haunt them as the defining point in the title race? It well might. And like you said, I do fancy Arsenal this weekend against Spurs. I kind of fancy Spurs against City. They kind of always pull something off against them. I think Spurs are in a little bit of a unique situation. I think the Ange kind of, not the charismatic nature of him hasn't worn off in terms of, you're starting to see a bit of a dip in form, but people still like him. They like the way they play. But some questions are being asked of him, which we could potentially explore when we discuss the European places, because it does seem like, you know, the clear front top three will qualify for the Champions League, Liverpool, City, and Arsenal. But as for Villa and Spurs, we can talk about them now. I mean, Villa had an unbelievable victory against Arsenal. I believe Unai Emery just... I want to say he just got a new contract. I mean, what a job he's done. And they're so well set up now. One on penalties in the Europa League against Lille. What a night for them. Emi Martinez in France again against French opposition after the World Cup, you know, craziness. But what, I think, are you most impressed with in terms of what Villa has been able to do? Because the leap they've made this year, going from like a nice team with a good manager and some good players to, okay, they're going to be in the Champions League next year, probably, barring any slip-ups. And, I mean, they've beaten Arsenal. They could, that could be the defining point in the title race. Just how impressive have Villa been this year?
I mean, the thing that's impressed me is the consistency. This is a new, relatively new manager, relatively new group of players. And yeah, they've picked up the odd draw, the odd defeat once in a while. But they have been consistently excellent. Emery has instilled a sustainable formula and style of play that has put them in an excellent position to get top four, which would be totally well-deserved. They've beaten the big boys. They've comfortably handled most of the teams further down the league. Watkins is in contention for player of the year. The team looks as good, as fresh, as fit today as it did at the start of the season. It seems like everybody's sort of waiting for them to do a Leicester and fall off, but they're just not going anywhere. So they've just been playing at a consistently high level all season. It's just so impressive what he's done there. It's an absolutely remarkable job. He deserves every penny of that new contract or extension, whatever it was.
And then what about Spurs? I mean, we can take a look at Spurs fixtures right now in terms of who they've got in the run-in. Obviously, big, massive North London derby. They've got Arsenal at home, Chelsea away, back-to-back derbies, Liverpool away, Burnley at home, City at home, Sheffield United away. They've got some tricky fixtures. I mean, is there a chance that Spurs slip out of that fifth spot and United could sneak up on them? I mean, it's 7 points and they've got a game in hand. That seems unlikely, but 6 points behind Villa with two games in hand. I mean, what do you rate Spurs' chances of sneaking up and pipping that fourth spot? Because, you know, for a large part of the season, we were kind of under the impression that fifth might be good enough for Champions League. I don't think, I'm pretty sure it's all but confirmed that will not be the case due to West Ham getting knocked out, Liverpool getting knocked out, Arsenal and City getting knocked out, and the performance of the Italian and German teams in Europe. So, I mean, is there a chance that Spurs can get to that Champions League spot? Because it looked for a long time, whether it was fourth or fifth, they'd get it. But now fifth's not going to be good enough.
No, I think they certainly need to get fourth. And they're certainly the underdogs now to do so, even though I've certainly pipped them for top four. I think they would do it. But when you look at that run-in and you look at the way Villa are playing and you look at there's sort of a lesser degree of consistency with Spurs, I think. They're brilliant to watch. They can be brilliant to watch. But when it rains, it pours at Spurs. They can be quite vulnerable at the back. But we all know their capabilities at the other end of the pitch. So I had them, again, to beat Villa to fourth, which they still can do. But they might need some sensational results in the North London Derby and against City and, you know, so which again, perfectly capable of, but it is certainly less likely. It's looking less likely than it did a few weeks ago when they smashed Villa. I think they need Richarlison and Pedro Porro back, which they might get this weekend, although Adaji's out for the season. The bench at Spurs isn't quite as convincing to that of Villa. I feel like I remember mentioning this at the beginning of the season. If your key players go down, who's coming in? It's sort of the same old faces that have, you know, kind of failed in previous regimes. So they've got top of the league Arsenal coming at the weekend. I think the odds are in Villa's favor. They still could do it. They are one of those teams that could surprise you, and we know how they're going to play. They're going to stick it to the big boys. So whether it pays off or not, I don't know. I think you have to fancy Arsenal at the weekend, even though it's at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. The way Arsenal are playing, they're just so sensational in attack. They move the ball so quickly. So Spurs are going to have to be real careful at the back. And they're going to need some big performances to get it done against the top two sides in the league. So, yeah, I mean, listen, fifth, not a bad season for them. But, you know, the way the start of the season went, you'd think they'd at least get fourth. And that looks to be, they look to be the underdogs for that at the moment.
Yeah, and then moving on down the table. So there's kind of three different brackets here. You've got the top three, and then Villa and Spurs, fourth, fifth, and then those two spots, sixth and seventh, which will be, I believe, a Conference League spot for seventh and a Europa League spot for sixth. United currently 3 points ahead of Newcastle, same games played. West Ham, 2 points behind them with a game more played. And then Chelsea, with two games less played, just 1 point behind West Ham. So they are sneaking up. And West Ham, I mean, I'll touch on them in just a bit, don't seem like they're going to finish the season particularly strong. I mean, just talking about Man United briefly, I think their season has been best encompassed by, it's just been pure chaos. And it was well represented in that chaotic game a few weeks ago on the Thursday night against Chelsea, that 4-3 game they blew. They blew a lead against Brentford. They almost blew the FA Cup semifinal against Coventry. They were trailing twice to Sheffield United at home. And then they just kind of squirmed their way out of there. And it's not sustainable to be a top four team, as evidenced by their position in the table. They are not one of the four best teams in the league. As for Newcastle, I think it's a really interesting season for Newcastle and Eddie Howe. So many injuries. There were such highs in the Champions League against PSG and that group of death and the away days. And it's all kind of fizzled out. But I think they'd still take the Conference League. I think they could get it. I think they could get the Europa League. I think United, I just don't know what you're going to get on any given, you know, match day from United, really at all. Before I go into West Ham, I just want to hear your thoughts on, you know, United and Newcastle in that sixth and seventh position.
Yeah, I think for United, sixth seems about right for them. They play, I mean, again, here's the thing. It's another team that is inconsistent. You know, they play some decent stuff from time to time, and then all of a sudden they just look crap. They just look so open defensively. They look so vulnerable. I don't know what it is, but they're just so up and down. They're unconvincing and undeserving of anything above sixth, in my opinion. I like a lot of their young players, which we've discussed, Garnacho, Kobbie Mainoo. They've brought guys through. They've had a few breakout stars. That's great. But that is probably the main positive for them this season, unless they shock us and win the FA Cup, which I would be shocked by personally. I'm sure you would as well. So weird season, question marks all over the place. We know what Ineos are going to do. They seem to be ripping it up and starting again. The question is, what are they going to do with the manager? And I think the longer we see it, you know, it's not even the style of play thing, because you can play on the counter, and United have done that in the past, and it is in their DNA. And you've had, you know, Gary Neville's talked about Louis van Gaal didn't really fit with that sort of possession-based controlling football. It's the vulnerability defensively. I mean, they look like they could concede at any minute sometimes against Coventry in the Championship. I mean, they were a whisker away from losing that after being 3-0 up. I mean, I know they got through and they found a way and all this, you know, but I mean, if they let that slip, that is absolute disaster for them. I mean, I know Coventry, credit to them, they did really well to get back in the game. But if United lose that 3-0 up to a Championship side, Ten Hag is in serious trouble. I mean, he already might be in serious trouble. I know they're in sixth. Maybe it was two steps forward, one step back. They're in an FA Cup final. Maybe you could look at that and spin it and say it's a decent season. But you need to see more from them on the pitch. You do. And I know results matter and it's a results-based business. But sixth place, the way they're playing, and I'm not saying you need 80% of the ball, but it's the unconvincing nature of United that is just really quite puzzling. And nothing seems to change. They don't seem to be improving. We've had great performances, but, and I'm not the first one to say this, they play in moments, which is exciting. Yeah. And it's kind of 90s football in that, but I don't think it's sustainable, as you've quite rightly put. So I think Ineos have a big decision to make, but again, who's out there? You know, who do you go for? I'm not quite sure. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with them in the summer. I think they'll probably get sixth, because I think they have a better Newcastle are creeping up on them, and they look a lot better than that dreadful spell that they had in midseason. The Palace loss for Newcastle is a strange one. Before that, I was a bit more bullish on their chances of maybe pipping United. Now, not so sure. So those two still have to play each other, so it could come down to that. Newcastle probably have the easier run, and I think they play Burnley, Sheffield United next two games. Still some injuries to deal with, but most of their key players are fit. And Isak up front, I mean, he just looks sensational. So, you know, European football, albeit not the Champions League, is a good season for Newcastle. The main worry for me with them is who's fit at the back. Because Botman's down, Kraft is playing, Dan Burn is fine, Cher is fine. It's sort of the other two spots that you worry about with injuries for Newcastle. So, yeah, they've done well to get themselves back in the race because they were down in mid-table. Whether you just feel like United might squeeze it because they always seem to do so, even though they're not playing the best football. So I don't know. But yeah, Conference League, I think, is a decent season for Newcastle and Eddie Howe, who have, like I said, done well to sort of climb back up the table. They certainly deserve European football.
Yeah, and the injuries have just ravaged them. And last night I watched that game against Palace. You could tell the players weren't there to play the way Eddie Howe wants to play, and they just lacked any kind of control in the game. And credit to, you know, Glasner and Palace. They smashed my boys West Ham, who I'll get into. Now, we had, you know, a huge occasion on Thursday at the London Stadium. I mean, Leverkusen coming to town, fresh off winning the Bundesliga, haven't lost a game all season, and we were all over them in the first half. We accumulated over 1 XG. They had 0.02. It was as loud as any stadium, not just the London Stadium. Like any stadium I'd been in, you know, over the last few months. It was just raucous. Everyone was on their feet the entire first half. We had chances. Antonio took one. And then we squandered a few, and we kind of just ran out of gas in the second half. It's kind of like we used up all the energy and intensity to press the living daylight out of Leverkusen, and they couldn't deal with it. I mean, Xabi Alonso had to sub off one of his center backs and bring on Tapsoba because, I forget the guy who was playing center half, he just couldn't deal with Antonio, and Ward-Prowse ran his socks off, as did Alvarez. Suchek was class, and it was just our finishing that let us down. Bowen had a couple half chances, as did Kudus, and then they scored a bit of a scummy goal to keep their unbeaten record technically alive, because that would have been an interesting point had they lost on the night but advanced through the tie, whether people would call them invincible. But, you know, we kind of used up all that energy, went to Selhurst Park, and just got absolutely turned over. It was 3-0 inside half an hour, 4-1 at halftime, lost the game 5-2, and it all now seems all but certain that David Moyes will not get a new contract at West Ham. We are going to go in a different direction. And you kind of can't really question it. I think there are people who would have rather him seen, you know, been given a new contract after the Conference League last year, or come out and said this will be the last year, because it just lacks a bit of vision on the part of Steichen and Sullivan and the West Ham board, because we've kind of just been in this limbo scenario all year where we're not playing great football, getting some results, but, you know, we've won like 2 games in all of 2024, so we're not really getting results. But, you know, if things go differently last Thursday, we're in the semifinals of the Europa League, and you're saying, hey, you know, how can you want a new manager? But I think what it does come down to is that David Moyes was the right manager for West Ham when he came in. He had unbelievable success. But his style of play, which has been rooted in strong defensive performances and clinical on the counterattack, has just gone away because we're crap defensively. Whether that's down to personnel or the tactics remains to be seen, but we've got some really exciting quality attacking players, and our game plan is just not emphasized towards that. You know, you have these guys like Bowen, like Kudus, Paketa for now. We'll see if he goes in the summer, but the game is not tailored to their strengths. And I think what West Ham fans want, they always want, is, you know, a bit more free-flowing, a bit more progressive, just having a go, as opposed to the pragmatism from Moyes. And I think, you know, credit to Sullivan, he's not, you know, done anything rash and sacked him. He's respected a manager that has brought silverware to this club, who has saved us from multiple relegation scraps. And I think on the whole, the sentiment will be an amicable split on both sides, because I think Moyes is kind of running out of energy too. I don't think it will be hard for him to get another job. I think there will be plenty of clubs who will be interested in him should he want to continue to work. And then who we go for is kind of up in the air. But as for the final 4 games of the season, I don't see us picking up many points. We've got Liverpool, Chelsea, City, and Luton to play. And I just think the players are kind of mentally checked out. You saw that against Palace. So a bit of a disappointing end to the season. We're well clear of the relegation battle. So there's that, obviously. And we had another great couple games in Europe. And I don't think it would be the worst thing for us to have a season off of Europe, to kind of rebuild the team, get a new manager in with some fresh ideas, and see if we can keep hold of the likes of Paquetá and Kudus to partner alongside Bowen, because I think there's something there, definitely, for the long term. But yeah, I don't see West Ham finishing in Europe, unfortunately, barring a last-minute, you know, turnaround in the dressing room. So yeah, but moving down the table to the relegation battle, obviously, Everton picked up two massive, massive wins back-to-back. I mean, Forest in some trouble now with the points deduction. That ridiculous statement that they issued, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that and the Everton Forest game? Because that was, I mean, that was as big a game as either team was going to have all season. Obviously, Everton followed that up with another big win. But, you know, where are Forest at and how do they perform against you guys?
Forest are in a really interesting situation. And I think I find Marinakis, the owner, so fascinating. I mean, because from all accounts, the statement started with him. And he wanted it at halftime, which is absolutely absurd. And I'm sure everyone listening to this has, you know, sort of heard about this situation where they released a statement sort of questioning the integrity of the referees who, listen, they had a bit of a shocker. Three penalty appeals. I don't think all of them were really as clear as day. I think, you know, maybe the one on Hudson-Odoi, I probably would have given the other two more 50-50. Always understand frustration. Every team gets frustrated, referees totally get that. To put out a statement like that on social media, questioning Stuart Atwell in the VAR room and him being a Luton fan. If he's a Luton fan, he's trying to help them. Wouldn't he want to draw? Like, I would have thought he would have wanted to draw. Because, you know, at the time, I know Everton are sort of looking upwards now, but one, we're not out of it. Two, at the time, it's quite close between them. I mean, you know, so surely the best result for Luton would have been a draw unless you backed Everton to go and spank, you know, beat Liverpool and maybe beat Brentford at the weekend, you know. So really, really strange to put that out there right after the game, by the way. They had that queued up. Like I said, Carragher was saying on the overlap that it was that they wanted to put it out at halftime, which is just unbelievable. So Forrest, again, the hiring of Mark Clattenburg to be a referee liaison guy, I mean, just – What options do they plan on taking here? It's not going to get replayed. It's not going to get undone. I have no problem with Nuno Espirito Santo maybe after the game saying, that was crazy, that was ridiculous, we should have had a penalty. Fine, every manager does that. For it to come from the club, to criticize the referee's allegiances and moral integrity. I mean, you can say they've had a shocker. You can say it should have been a penalty. To say he's a Luton fan, we didn't want him to ref the game, is quite ridiculous. It just really is. And Forrest, they played okay. They created a few chances. Pickford made one big save. A few penalty appeals, sure. Everton scored two really good goals. Looked good on the counterattack. Looked a lot more solid on our end. Had a good plan. Goodison was, you know, was up for it. It would have been a tough task for Forrest to win that game, the way Everton defended and the way they counterattacked. And we're always going to try to bounce back after a pretty poor defeat to Chelsea. And, you know, we're now in a nice little run with clean sheets at home. So I think it was always going to be tough for them to break down Everton. But Forest should still be the favorites to stay up over Luton, who we can touch on, who are just leaking goals. Forest, I've always been quite bullish on the squad at the start of the season. I think Alanga, good signing, has looked really lively. Hudson-Odoi, I like him. Can he stay fit? Chris Wood up front, he's got a great conversion rate. But Awoniyi, I think we both like, and they've missed him. Gibbs White, really like him. Murillo at the back, really like him. Midfield, bit inconsistent. Sold Mangala, kind of a strange one. Sangare has not hit the ground running. Dominguez, don't know much about him. So yeah, there's a few question marks, but they've got a decent squad. And Nuno's done okay. And they looked fine in possession. And they, you know, I could see what he was trying to do. Maybe they couldn't have gotten a draw if the penalties have gone their way. But, you know, I think you have to credit Everton. They won the game fair and square, you know, in terms of scoring two goals from open play. Well-deserved. So it's just a weird, you know, it's also a weird sort of energy and vibe to put out there. You know, you've got a few games left to play. It's in your hands. You can easily stay up if you do what you have to do. I don't think you want that hanging over the players. I don't think you want to put that out there and now them all think the world's against us, sulking, all this sort of crap. I think that's the opposite of what you want. You want to galvanize that team. So I don't think it was the right move. I don't think anyone did. Should they still stay up? Absolutely. Could they? Yeah. Luton, I think, are in big trouble. Again, the way they look defensively. But yeah, just a really, really strange decision. And I think it shows and sort of alerts us to the rash decisions of Marinakis, the strategy at Nottingham Forest, which, you know, great club, great fans. What they've done since they've been back in the Premier League and spending all this money on players, getting them into a FFP situation. Now this with Clattenburg and the referee statement, it's all a bit odd. It's all a bit rash and erratic and just strange. And it reflects on the owner for me. I just think it's a really, it could cost them, you know, it could cost them, you know, not even the referee decision, this negative energy around them, you know, it could play into, you know, the other team's hands. Who knows, right? I just think it's a very, very strange thing to do at this time in the season. So, you know, I don't know. I think they have more than enough to stay up, as I've said. But man, what a strange scenario.
It's bizarre, and it really reflects poorly on Marinakis, but I don't actually think it's all that surprising, given from what we've seen from him prior. And you bring up an interesting point on how this will affect kind of the mental side of things for the Forest players, because I do think out of them, Luton and Burnley, I do think they have the best squad. I know Burnley are playing better. Like you said, Luton are shipping goals at the moment, which has gone against what has put them in a okay position relative to, you know, our expectations of them preseason. But now it's going to be really interesting for Forest to see whether they can just focus on the pitch and not this ridiculous distraction. And I think if you're the players, I think Nuno is probably fuming. As much as he might agree with the statement, and he might be fuming with the referees, to take the focus away from the field to the boardroom and the club as a whole just is not what you want as a manager with four games to go and you're sitting 17th. That's just not ideal. So the relegation scrap will be interesting. I think Forest, like you said, I agree they'll have enough to stay up. I mean, one brief point we want to touch on before we get into some Champions League talk. I mean, what does it say? Is it a surprise to you that most likely the three teams that were promoted are going to go straight back down? You don't see that very often. I think a lot of people were pretty positive about this Burnley team. I think maybe Luton and Sheffield United a bit more predictable. But what does that say about, you know, the state of the Championship and the Premier League, especially when it looks like, you know, teams like Leicester are going to come right back up, Southampton might come right back up, and just that as a bit of an interesting case study.
Yeah, I mean, Burnley, they're only 3 points off it, which I think a few months ago we all would have said they'd be done and dusted by now. But you're right, it is a bit of a damning indictment on sort of the gap between the divisions. I think it's, you know, I don't want to drone on about finances every time, but I think, and maybe the independent regulator will bring this, something needs to change, because it's sad that the three teams, I mean, listen, Luton could stay up, Burnley could even stay up, but I think they both will go down. And if it's three up, three down, well, Ipswich might come up, you know, but does it takes a miracle now for a team like Ipswich to come up, or for a team like Luton to stay up? You know, that is sort of a damning indictment of where we're at. The parachute payment's obviously a huge talking point. Does that need to be looked at? So, I mean, you look at somebody's compared like the wage bill of Luton to that of like Nottingham Forest. I mean, look what Nottingham Forest had to do to give themselves a chance of staying up last year. They signed 20 odd players, and I know they had a bunch out on loan, and they had to even, you know, probably stay in the Championship. They had to sign a lot of players, but, you know, to give themselves a fighting chance. And this is year two now that they're scrapping it. They've spent tons and tons of money, have had a 4-point deduction because of spending tons and tons of money, and they still might go down, you know? So it's an impossible job, you know, and even for an experienced manager like Nuno. So yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see if Leicester are going to be Burnley 2.0, or if they're going to do something a bit different. I actually think Burnley sort of, I'd like to think they have the right approach with sticking with Vince and company. They've been better the back half of the season. They've caused a few teams issues. They're going to go down, but they got a great chance of coming back up. Parachute payments, spend a bit more money, start to build a team. You know, they seem to have a squad of players that will stick with them. Maybe somebody pips off like Audibert. I don't know. I would say maybe he needs another year in the champ, but you know, but that's the strategy now, right? It's long term, or you do the Forest and you spend a crap ton of money, which has also gone poorly for teams like Fulham in the past, right? So I think it's totally changed now, the landscape of promotion relegation. You have to either splurge, which most teams can't afford to do, or you have to accept, like Sheffield United and Burnley, that you're going to go down, take the payments, build a slightly better team, come back up and have a go again. You know, unless you're backed by huge investment, unless you're extremely savvy and you have to be lucky on the pitch and in the transfer market, you're probably going to be spending the following season in the championship, which, again, is a bit sad, but it's just where we're at with the money in this league.
All right, moving from one end of the football spectrum to the other, Champions League quarterfinals. I mean, this is some of the best Champions League knockout football we've seen in years. Man City and Arsenal both knocked out at the hands of European giants Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. Dortmund advancing, turning around a first leg defeat against Simeone's Atletico, and some chaos in the PSG-Barca tie. I mean, what did you make of what were some of your biggest takeaways from the fixtures, and who do you fancy to go on and win it now? Because at least personally for me, I thought it would have been one of Arsenal or City. They're both out now, and it's kind of up for grabs. So what did you make of just the best of the best fixtures? Some of the goals we saw were incredible, and who do you think will go on to win it now?
Yeah, well, I mean, what a round. I mean, that was absolutely so entertaining for the neutral. I think you're right. The favorites were the English teams. I think it makes it a bit more interesting, to be honest, that they're out. I think it's anyone's game. You have to fancy Madrid because of their pedigree in the competition, the history around them. But I like what's going on. I mean, I don't like what's going on with Bayern in terms of their league form. But in terms of the Champions League, they've got Tuchel, who's won it. They've got an experienced squad. They've got an exciting front four. They've got youth. They've got experience all over the pitch. So, you know, they'll fancy themselves against Madrid. And the game plan was spot on against Arsenal. I think it was probably a year too early for Arsenal, first year back in the Champions League. And I think we all probably underestimated the squad and pedigree and experience of Bayern Munich. And like I said, their game plan worked. Yeah, the second leg was a bit dull, but they looked dangerous on the counterattack. And the front four was just electric in that first leg. So I think the favorites are probably Madrid and Bayern. I think PSG, really entertaining tie with Barcelona. I thought the red card changed everything, though, really. I think Barcelona played really well in the first leg. PSG had to turn it around after that, and they did, you know, but they were up a man. Vatini was very impressive. So I think they might be a bit lightweight in midfield against a Bayern or a Madrid PSG. So I don't really fancy them, although Mbappe, arguably the best player in the world, can hurt any team. So, you know, he could be the X factor, although he's had a chance before against Bayern, of course, with Neymar and Tuchel at the helm, and they didn't get it done there. So I think Enrique, if he reaches the final, has done really well, even though their side of the draw is probably favorable and they did get a stroke of luck with the red card. For Barcelona, Xavi looks like he's staying now. There's still a lot of work to be done at Barcelona. They are a mess behind the scenes, but I actually don't mind the look of the squad. They have some really promising young players. They've got a few experienced players. I think Lewandowski probably needs replacing. So if I was a Barca fan, I'd be happy to see Xavi continue with the project and continue to develop this squad. But they were never really going to win it. And the red card was just frankly unlucky for them. So yeah, I don't know. I think Real will be the favorites. You know, that tie showed that's just what they can do. They hung around in both games. Of course, conceded possession, as any team would do against City. But they have so many attacking weapons, and they can just score out of nowhere. And they've got Ancelotti, you know? So they've got the right blend of experience and youth, and they're probably the favorites. So probably the only team that could do that to Man City over two legs, who were themselves, you know, the City were just unlucky. I mean, they'll play any team off the park, but a team like Madrid can just hurt them out of nowhere. I mean, they were just, you know, Rodrigo and Vinicius. I mean, you can never count them out, right? So Real would not be surprised to see them do it. Bayern have a manager who's won this competition. They've got a really good squad. They've been underwhelming in the league, but they could certainly do it. And then on the other side, we all sort of fancied Atleti. Didn't really work out for them. So that's certainly the weaker side. I would expect the winner of Bayern or Real to win it. After that, too, to go through against Man City, albeit on penalties, you have to fancy them. It feels like you'd be silly not to pick Madrid. And I'd love to see Bayern win it or PSG. Well, PSG, whatever, you know. But it just feels like it will be Madrid. Bellingham, you know, they've had that sort of season. They've tipped Girona in the league. They're miles ahead of Barcelona. They've knocked out the defending champions. It all seems to be going their way. So we'll see if Bayern can surprise us or another team can surprise us. But it does seem like it'll be Madrid.
I kind of second everything you've touched on in terms of the winner of that tie going through probably being the strong favorite over a PSG or a Dortmund. I would tend to lean towards Madrid because they just have this knack in Europe, and we've seen it time and time again of just finding ways to win. And I don't think I thought City were going to roll them over. I thought City were going to control the game, be clinical, be strong at the back, but Madrid just have these moments in them in the big games under the brightest lights and the biggest occasions where they just turn up. And I think it's theirs to lose now. I think Bayern, they had an interesting way of going about the Arsenal tie. I mean, Arsenal are one of the best teams, if not the best team in Europe on form right now, and Bayern knocked them out. So you have to say Bayern are more than up to the task. I think Tuchel kind of has this bitterness about him in that he's not going to stay there long term. He's going to want some, you know, revenge against Madrid. He got knocked out by them when he was Chelsea manager of the year after they won it in dramatic fashion. And I can see them winning, but I also think Madrid are the favorites, like you said. I think they go on and win this tournament. That'll be, what, I think 14 now. Jude might win the Ballon d'Or because of it, maybe. I don't know. If Bayern wins it, maybe Kane does. I mean, all sorts of conversations in that department. I know it's a bit separate. And if for PSG, I mean, you know, I was one of Mbappe's biggest fans, and it's kind of just been the off-the-field antics that have turned me kind of off of him, and it's less easy to root for him. But with that being said, he seems destined to leave. He seems destined to go to Real Madrid. But if he were to cap off his PSG career with the Champions League, that would be huge. And I really like Luis Enrique as a manager, as a personality. I think he's great. I'd be happy for him to win another Champions League after he won it back in 2015. But yeah, just to wrap things up, I think Madrid are the favorites. I think they will go on and do it. And where that leaves Jude and Vinicius and this new generation of Galacticos with seemingly Mbappe waiting in the wings will be, you know, quite the I don't know, idea of this team with so many quality players. I mean, we've seen it before with Madrid, but to this extent again is going to be quite something. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. Title race heating up, Champions League's heating up. We'll be back with some more content over the summer, and I think we might continue into the Euros, definitely. So stay tuned. Until next time, thank you for listening.